Background music of Larry Razavi and his out of town checks with our theme Musicians Come and Play wrapping up right there means it's time for another edition of our Musicians Come and Play program here on KASM. You're listening to your dependable neighbor for all of central Minnesota, KASM Albany, 1150 AM, KDDG Albany 105.5 HD2, 107.7 on your FM dial, streaming on the World Wide Web at mychasm.com as we broadcast from the Minnesota Soybean Research and Promotional Council studios, powered by the Soybean Checkoff, we are Chasm. We're now at 9 minutes before the hour of 12 noon. Rain still coming down very lightly here in central Minnesota. Temperature reading is 65 degrees. And it is our 300th edition of our Musicians Come and Play program. And we have a very special guest on the line, and we're going to go to the phones right now and bring him in. Say good morning to Mr. Gene Thomas. Gene, how are you?
I'm doing great, Si.
Well, awesome.
It's always nice to get to talk to some of my old customers.
Well, great. That's awesome. And, Gene, where are you at? For the folks listening in, I'd like to know, where are you at these days?
Well, my home is up in Voyager National Park up by on Lake Capitogama.
Uh-huh.
It's 30 miles east of International Falls.
Okay. And how long you been up there, Gene?
Well, I purchased the place about 20 years ago, but I only moved up here permanently 2 years.
Okay, very good. And where was home for you? Where were you born and raised?
Well, I was born and raised outside of Minneapolis in a town called Roseville.
Oh, okay.
Which is the first suburb out of Minneapolis. It's actually in the same Ramsey County area.
Oh, sure. And who was Mom and Dad?
Well, my mom always loved music. Uh-huh. My father's name was Joseph. My mother's name was Eleanor. Uh-huh. And my father, when I was in eighth grade, bought me a clarinet, a professional clarinet, and along with that came a number of lessons from the first chair clarinetist of the Minneapolis Symphony.
Oh, my.
And I continued to go to him when I was 15, you could drive in the state of Minnesota, and my lesson would sometimes last about 2 to 3 hours, and after the lesson, I would drive two or three symphony musicians home.
Uh-huh.
And he inspired me to practice about an hour a day.
Okay.
And we had our first, my first job was when I was in eighth grade playing music. My brother Joe, 2 years older than I, really carried me on clarinet. I was not, shouldn't have been good enough to play then.
Okay.
But we didn't do that bad because they continued to have us back about four times a year for the next 4 years.
Oh, neat. You bet.
And that was the birth of the Jolly Brothers.
Boy, and what a great band you guys were. I'm not sure how long your run was, but boy, that was back in my going out days. And we used to go to a little ballroom here out in St. Anna, Minnesota, and people would line up before the dance to wait to see the Jolly Brothers.
Yeah, it was a good time. You know, later on we started to go all the way to Connecticut and Pennsylvania, Michigan, yeah, all the way to the East Coast we played.
Oh, my goodness.
We probably hold the record. We were in, I think it was in 1969 or 1970, we played more than 400 one-night engagements a year. No two jobs were in the same location.
Oh.
We played 32 double Saturdays.
Uh-huh.
We would play in the afternoon and then pack up and drive as far as 90 miles and set up and play again.
Oh, my
word. Also that year we played 28 double Sundays where we played for 4 hours, backed up, drove as far as 90 miles, and played again.
Oh, my word.
So we were playing, basically, if a person was to stand on the stage and start playing music, they would play 24 hours a day. And when they reach 2 years of playing, that's as many hours that I spent on the bandstand.
Oh, my word. Wow. That's a pretty awesome run, Gene.
There was a couple of tricks that we used. I went and had a contract drawn up with the attorney. If the ballroom operator would sign it, would oblige him to give us one day every month to play at his ballroom, as long as it was not a normal day of operation. So, take Rochester for Minnesota. Rochester, Minnesota. I like to bring that one up because it's the funniest. After they signed the contract, what I would do is I would ask the ballroom operator who is their favorite drawing band. And then I would ask who is their second best drawing band. Now, I had the gate. And the ballroom had the bar.
Okay.
And so on the first night, we would have the best drawing band for the area playing. And, of course, I did my own advertising.
Okay.
And it said Midwest number one Polish polka band. And I put that ad in the paper. And the other band leader said to the ballroom opera, well, why don't you say that about us? He says he's buying his own ad. Of course, I could do that because I had my own gate.
Sure. There you go.
So the cheapest day that we played, the less amount of money that we made in the week was on Saturday night because we couldn't get the gate.
Oh,
Saturday
yeah.
Saturday night.
Okay. Wow. That's pretty awesome. So... how did you become to be a Polish band, though? I mean, there was so much Dutchman and New Ulm-style music going on. Was it in your heritage, or were there other bands around you that you idolized a little bit? Or how'd you get going there with the Polish style?
Well, yeah, our heritage is Polish.
Okay.
And it was very interesting. My brother Joe played accordion.
Yeah.
On my grandmother's 50th wedding anniversary, there was a band, a very good band, one of the best bands in the Polish neighborhood, that was called the Chesney Brothers.
Oh, yeah.
Now, the Chesney Brothers, my brother played for that wedding anniversary. My brother Joe sat on the band, next to the bandstand with his arm around the railing, and would not move for 4 hours, after which his playing ability improved tremendously. It just sang. I mean, you could, when he played accordion, it was it sounded perfect.
My goodness.
I think that's where he picked up. Interesting enough, after my brother Joe left because he didn't want to play every night of the week, and we did.
Mm-hmm.
That was the time at which he left. Jerry Zelazny, son of one of the Chesney girls, was Jerry Zelazny. So he had music in his blood also. And incidentally, I got to mention Fred. Fred wanted me to remind everybody that we would have done much better if he wouldn't have left the band.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, we had Fred on here a few weeks back, and he's another interesting story, huh?
Yeah, very much so.
Oh, well, very good. Gene, if you want to just hold that thought for just a moment, we've already reached 12 o'clock here in central Minnesota. It's time to read the ad for our sponsor, the St. Joe Meat Market, and then we'll come back with you and continue the conversation, if that's all right.
Very good.
All righty. So the St. Joe Meat Market, reminding you that the summer season now starting to wind down, but still a great time for family outings, get-togethers, and summer picnics. Stop in and pick up some brats, burgers, and hot dogs for on the grill. Also in the fresh meats counter are fresh-cut beef steaks, pork steaks, and chops, and fresh chicken, also delicious on the grill. Another great entree for on the grill are our homemade kebabs. The Brat of the Week series continues, and this week it's our smoked wild rice and cheese brats. This brat was formed one day when at the end of the day we mixed the leftovers out of the stuffer from these two batches of sausage together, and were pleasantly surprised how well they blended together to make yet another new exciting flavor. Stop by this week and stock up, taking 30 cents off each package at the checkout counter all week long, unlimited quantities. The brat sales continue on Friday and Saturday out in front of the St. Joe Meat Market. Come out and enjoy a brat and a beverage for a reasonable fee while supporting some very worthwhile causes. They sincerely appreciate it. Always more in-store specials at the St. Joe Meat Market, so like us on Facebook, look for us on the web, www.stjosephmeatmarket.com, or you can always call 320-363-4913 for more information. And Gene, for being our guest on the program, this is how it works. The St. Joe Meat Market, along with Chasm, well, we put up a nice meat package at the meat market, and we send that out to you priority mail. Hope that you and your wife and family around you enjoy it in good health. How's that sound for you? Are you there, Gene?
Oh, that sounds great.
All righty. Good.
I
knew I caught you. I should have told the folks that we were visiting with Gene Thomas up in northern Minnesota, and you guys had just attended church services, and you're sitting in the car on the cell phone waiting for Cy to call, right?
That was exactly the plan that we did.
All right. Well, that's awesome. Well, very good. Well, Gene, you guys had such a great run. So did you do anything for a full-time occupation besides music then while you were playing, or did you wait till after you were done?
No, that was it. My whole life was music.
Okay.
And I had no other job.
Okay. Yeah, as much as you were playing, there was no time.
No, not really, because we were on the road just yep. constantly. And one of the reasons that I finally quit the country went into a recession.
Yeah.
And people didn't have the money to go out.
Sure.
And I called to get my jobs. We always played once every 6 months. Six weeks
mm-hmm.
at New Prague and also at George's in New Ulm.
Sure.
And I called for the job, and I said to the gal, well, can I have such and such date? She says, no, we can't do it that day. I said, I gave her another date. And this is the first time she ever said no, because
mm-hmm.
I know they're not open on those days that I choose. And she said no three times, and I says, what's happening? She says, well, we can't have you back. I says, why can't you have her back? Our ballroom only holds 900 people. You had 1,200 people in there.
Oh, my gosh.
And there was more outside, and the cops said they don't know what to do with all the people.
Oh.
I called up George's in New Ulm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I said, George, I'm open this date. Can we have it? And he says, no, we can't oblige you. Can't have it. The cop says you can't come in town anymore. Too many people are coming to town, and they don't know what to do with the people.
Oh, my goodness.
So the third call I made was Lee at Alexandria, Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
I said, Lee, I have these Saturdays open. And he says, I got to cut your price. He says, we got packed houses. Why do you have to cut our price? Well, if you don't cut your price, I can't afford to stay open and pay for the other bands because they're not drawing.
Oh.
And I says, I'll get you back. I hung up. And, of course, this was about 1972.
Yeah.
Or 73, I can't quite remember.
Sure.
And I was burnt out in 1967 when our Apple Peaches Punk and Pie album came out. But with the huge crowds, how do you walk away from a thing like that?
Yeah.
And so I just said I quit, and that was it.
Okay.
I just was tired. Life was 48 hours, 24 hours a day.
You bet.
Sleeping only 8 hours. If I wasn't booking or promoting or trying to come up with some way.
Yep.
A couple of the things that highlight my career is the biggest polka convention in the United States is in New London, Connecticut.
Okay.
And I flew down there, and we weren't going to make money because what they paid me was barely enough to cover the charge, the pay of the guys, and the airfare.
Sure.
And when we played, they asked us. Let's see. I'm trying to think of who was on the bandstand. Marion Lush was there. Frankie Yankovic was there. Everybody is there. They had bands on the beach playing, and then they had two bands in the ballroom, so they had 8 hours of music. So we played, and then they asked us to play again. The first time in the history of that convention did anybody ever ask to play again. It was a different style. If you listen to the music, the Jolly Brothers style was a style that was unique. Nobody else had it. The bands coming out of the East Coast tend to sound like us now. So then they wanted us to play the third time, and we had to get back to our job, our next job.
Sure.
The other thing is we played Cobo Hall, which is the largest convention hall in the United States. Of course, it was with another polka convention. But the trick that we used in the state of Minnesota to get knowledge. Oh, I've got one other thing.
Sure.
We were playing on KSTP television. Incidentally, our show would always have, there was free radio television stations, and we'd have more listeners on our show than the other two stations put together.
My goodness.
In fact, there was four radio stations at the time, and on occasion we'd beat all three with listening ratings. So we were on the television for 2 years with our own TV show. So KSTP was sponsoring the broadcast for the state of Minnesota, and they sent out flyers all across the state, all across the nation to all the radio stations, and wanted to know what band they wanted. Stanley Hubbard said, "I'm amazed. We did not mention anything about any names of suggestions." And he said over 50% of the people that responded said that they wanted the Jolly Brothers. So that was quite amazing.
That's a real compliment. Wow.
The trick that we did was, number one, we played more than 7 days a week.
Sure.
You know.
Yep.
We went up. All other bands, at that time, Elmer Scheid was the most popular band before the Jolly Brothers. And they were playing a job and a half a week. Maybe two times, 1 week, one the next week. They're going up against a band that's playing seven jobs a week.
Sure.
So when I asked the ballroom operators, who's their favorite band? I would hire that band to play at that at their ballroom and pay them. Mm-hmm. That first job, we wouldn't make any money. But on the table would be a list of our jobs that would go out, and we'd always include something out east. So when the people came, they probably didn't know the Jolly Brothers, and they sat down at the table, the first thing they had seen was a dance schedule. Now, they heard about us in the paper saying us Midwest number one. Well, who are these guys? What the hell are they?
You know?
So they come to the dance, they pick up the dance schedule, and holy mackerel, they're playing every night of the week. You know,
yeah.
So we haven't even played yet, and we're out, now we're setting the mind, setting their minds and saying, hey, these guys are good.
Yeah, oh, yes.
And then, of course, when we get up there, we didn't have any music stands in front of us.
Yep.
I did have one music stand with a list of 200 tunes that we knew by heart.
Okay.
During the battle of the bands, the other band went first. And they'd sit there and say, who's going to come out on a Wednesday night, you know?
Sure.
And they'd sit down and pop, 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 you know. All of a sudden, we get up there with no music stand, and we set the place on fire.
Sure.
Now, the reason I like, the guys did, they weren't drinking tea when they played.
Okay.
And our trumpet player, Louis Bassani.
Yeah.
Oh, I got to tell you about him later on, too.
Sure.
I'm standing at the back of the bar, the opposite side of the stage, and I seen Louis, and these guys came on after we played the first time, and they started standing on their chairs and looking at their music and trying to move back and forth. When we play, we move back and forth. You know what we're
Absolutely, talking. Yes.
And I said to Louis, I said, Louis, look at They're actually trying to fight back.
Because
it's called the Battle of Bands.
Yeah, yep.
He said, and he would have grinned, and he's two sheets to the wind, but never missed a note. And he said, yeah, I got a plan. I said, what is it? He says, I don't know yet, but it's going to be a good one. So on our polka marathon that night, Louis put down his trumpet, climbed up on the rafters of the ballroom. I think Stan Shemita's in Santa Ana was like that too, had right
open roof rafters.
Yep. So hanging down.
Yep.
I think it was Stan's place in Steve's Little City in Minneapolis, St. Paul.
Yep.
And that. He got there, hung upside down, facing the audience, swinging back and forth, playing his trumpet, never missing a note, and the crowd went wild.
Oh, I can believe that.
That was our first job at Hoot Gibson in Rochester with the ballroom operator. Hoot comes running up. Hoot comes running up and says, my insurance. Joe Granda, the drummer, hollered, don't worry, he used to be in the circus. Oh, okay, it's all right. Well, he never was in the circus.
No. Well, you're mentioning some great names there. You must have bumped elbows with a lot of great musicians over the years with the Jolly Brothers, huh?
Oh, yeah. There for a while. Of course, you know that the Jolly Brothers played rock quite a bit, too.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, always a polka dance, but we played rock music. And, of course, we had the uncanny ability to sound like a rock band when we played rock. But one of the guys that played guitar in our band, the guitar players seem to come in and out, was Olivia Newton-John's road band leader. When she came to town and traveled across the country, she would have him as the band leader.
Oh, my gosh.
And he said to me, he says, Gene, your job is a much better gig than Olivia. He said, you group your jobs together in a closer area so you don't have to drive across the country. And you pay for the hotel room. You pay us the same amount of money that she gets paid. She pays. And you supply the transportation. I said, with Olivia Newton-John, we could be in Texas one day and Minneapolis the next.
Oh, yes.
And if we don't make it, we will never play on a major name again because our name gets passed around and they miss the job.
Sure, sure.
So, anyway, that was one of the highlights. And that's the way, so the second job, of course, was with the second best drawing band, and we proceeded to do the same thing with her. After that, we were making 2 to 4 times the amount of money that we made on Saturday night.
Wow. My goodness.
Yeah.
And you were paying the other band besides, huh?
Well, we'd only do that for the first two.
Oh, for the first two. Okay.
Yeah, after that, we didn't need them anymore.
Okay.
We wanted them to bring their customers.
Okay. Well, Gene, one of the things that impressed me so much about your band, and just a little criticism of bands today, you guys looked so neat. I mean, was this your idea to dress? You had white shirts, white frilly shirts, and dress pants, really neat, and cummerbunds, and the whole works. Nowadays, a lot of times you see the bands walk in and cowboy boots and blue jeans, and none of them are dressed alike, and you don't even know it's the band until they finally all sit on stage. But you guys were a show to look at.
Yeah, yeah. And here's an interesting fact. Louis Bassani was 10 years older than I.
Okay.
The trumpet player.
Yeah.
And Joe Granda was somewhere in between. Then there was me. And then our bass guitar player, Little John, was 10 years younger than I. So we had not only the look up on the stage, we had someone that the people of those age groups could identify with.
Neat, yeah.
We looked like musicians.
Well, I think that's just awesome because people like to see something that's neat and appealing, and that's the way I would remember your band.
Yeah, it was fun. Now, let me tell you a little bit about Louis Bassani, the trumpet player.
Okay.
Whereas I have as a clarinet teacher, the first chair clarinetist for the Minnesota Symphony, somebody gave him a trumpet, and Louis liked to drink 7-7. And he took that trumpet at his favorite bar in Chautauqua, Wisconsin. Sat down by the jukebox and started to play by ear. And that was his music lesson. And it's no wonder that he developed his own style, that driving trumpet style.
Uh-huh.
I always felt that my job was to try to make the best trumpet player ever to play polka music in the United States sound better.
Uh-huh.
And that's what I tried to do
while playing on.
The way that we would learn a new music when we were playing at Maeslack's Bar in Northeast Minneapolis is that Louis would hear a tune, get a copy of the 45, get Stosh to put it on the jukebox. And then on our break, Louis would say, hey, listen to this music. We want to play this one next. I said, okay, we'll listen to it. So, okay, we got the melody in our head. And then we would, after our 15-minute break, get back on the bandstand, and that would be playing. That same tune would be playing again.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'd pick up our instruments and play it.
Oh, my gosh. Never having played it before.
Never having played it before. And first time through, I would play lead with Louis on trumpet. I'd be on clarinet or sax.
Mm-hmm.
And second time through, I'd go to harmony.
Oh, my gosh.
And quite often after we did that, oh, that's good. We played a couple of times that night. The next job, the next day, we get on the stage. What's that new tune we get? Anybody know it?
Oh, golly.
And you know, we couldn't play it unless somebody could hum the
melody.
But once we got the melody, okay, let's play it. Now, how can you do that? I'll tell you how you do that. By playing that often, that much, when you talk and say words, you don't think about it. You just kind of do it, right?
Yep.
I mean, I don't have anything written down in here. I'm just talking to you like I normally talk.
Yep.
Well, that ability, when you play your instrument that much, that ability now becomes moved to the musical instrument.
Okay.
So you hear a note, you can play it. You hear a melody, you can play it.
That is awesome.
You know, if you hear something and somebody says, you can repeat it. Right?
Okay. Yep. That's right.
Well, when you hear a melody, we can play it.
Oh, yes. Oh, that's incredible.
It never really leaves you. So that's a little story about Louis, and there's stories where we picked up the drummer, threw him off a stage that was a couple of feet higher. He got up.
Oh, golly.
I mean, you heard of guys breaking their guitars at a rock band, but we did some crazy things like that.
I'll bet you did.
Lee Ann, what was it that... there was a song that said, "We're going to hang them from the sky." We're going to a polka that hang them from the. Drinking because I'm drinking with my pile. Anyway, Lee Hans up in Alexandria, Minnesota, made a harness and put a hook up on his rafters. During the tune, guys hoisted me up on the hook on a harness that looked like I was being hung for drinking too much.
Oh, golly. So, Gene, I'm sure folks are wondering. So you played that that length of time that you mentioned, the 60s into the 70s, and then gave it up. Have you picked up the clarinet or sax at all since then, or did you put it away totally?
I put it away totally. I brought out the clarinet when my granddaughter started to play clarinet in high school.
Okay.
And I played a little bit, but then I wanted to buy another saxophone, and I played a little bit then, but... My favorite thing is to, when I was in Minneapolis, right before I moved up to the cabin, was we had choir practice for singing every Wednesday.
Okay.
And, that was my, I really looked forward to that.
Okay.
When I was growing up, before I played a musical instrument, I would help my mother clean the house, singing the songs. She liked music, and I continued to sing.
Sure.
And so music was bred into me.
Now, were you the main vocalist for the Jolly Brothers, or did everybody sing?
Pardon?
I say, were you the main vocalist for the Jolly Brothers, or did all of the members sing?
Yeah, Louis sang a little bit. I was the main vocalist when my brother Joe was in the band. I think he left in 1967.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, here's something that's very interesting. The highest paid bands in the state of Minnesota were the bands that came out of the Jolly Brothers.
Okay.
My brother Joe with the Northeasters.
Uh-huh.
There was one other one. I don't know. There was one other one, but I don't know.
What was it, the Jolly Jokers?
Yeah, right. When Louis and Joe left.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And they had the largest crowds.
Oh my gosh!
But I don't know if it's a coincidence. But when I quit in 72 and 73, the ballroom industry went down.
Okay. Yep. Oh golly. Well, this
I don't know if it had anything to do with it. I just pointed out.
Yeah. Well, this has been fun, Gene. It's been so wonderful talking to you. You've told us so many stories. I usually ask everybody if they've got one unique experience that they'd want to share with the listeners. I don't know. Do you have anything beyond what you've already told us?
Not now, but if I think about it, you can call me again.
Okay. Yeah. We have not nearly covered everything. The other thing I needed to ask you before I let you go is a little bit about the recording business. How many recordings did you make?
Well, I have, I think, 6 albums of my own with the Gene Thomas and the Jolly Brothers.
Okay.
We had another album with my brother Joe from Fred.
Okay.
That was the first one. And then Shimoleski, the senator, bought, I believe, 2 or 3 albums from me, maybe 4. And then we were the band behind Dorothy, everybody's mother, that played, that came out with 2 albums. And then the Cook sisters from Michigan. I think they only did 1 album. The Langner sisters did 2 or 3 albums, and we were the bands behind all those.
Yeah, yeah.
Of course, I bought my own recording studio back in 67.
Mm-hmm.
Apple Peaches Funk and Pie was the first big album was done on that. The one before that was someone else's recording equipment.
Okay.
When I built my home in 1966, I put a 10-foot ceiling in the basement so we could have a recording studio.
Mm-hmm.
And then after Apple Peaches, incidentally, I had said that we didn't make any money in New London, Connecticut at the big poker convention.
Yeah.
As a result of that, we sold 10,000 albums from distributors because of that one job we played.
Oh, my gosh.
So I bought the biggest recording equipment possible. It was a 1-inch tape, Ampex 440, I think. It was called the Les Paul Mary Ford thing because you had 8 channels. But you could activate the record head as a playback head, and therefore listen to yourself. Let's see, one guy could record on a mic on one head,
mm-hmm.
And then when he got down to 7, you could dump all 7 into 1 and start all over again. So a guy could actually become a symphony.
Oh, golly.
That was the biggest recording. There was only one other station that had that, one other company that had that recording equipment this side of, in the Midwest.
Sure, sure.
And that was K Bang Studios.
Yep.
Later on, Herb Pfeiffer. Bought even a bigger thing that, but that was about 3 years, 3 years later. And the recording studio, they didn't want to sell me the studio, but there was a fella, I can't remember his name, that backed me on it. He worked at the Hi-Fi Sound.
Mm-hmm.
This recorder in 1968 cost $12,000. The fellow came over and looked at my documents of what kind of records we were selling. And he says, yeah, I'll back you. And so they sold me the album. And then the fellow that did all the engineering, or sold me the recorder, the fellow that did all the engineering, it was just a deck. You needed the amplifiers and the speakers and everything else. That was another $12,000. The fellow that did the engineering was the old senators to the state of Minnesota, Durenberger.
Oh, yeah.
Durenberger's brother was instrumental in, he was the one of the head engineers at WCCO Radio.
Okay.
Durenberger was instrumental in setting up a radio-free Europe after the World War II, and he was in my basement setting up the systems. We paid for it in about 6 months.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. Oh, well, Gene, this has been awesome. I'll tell you, we've got to save a little time to play some music. Before I let you go, I just got to ask you, all the songs that you've played and recorded, was there one that was your favorite?
Well, the one that everybody liked, I got two of them that were a favorite, is Don't Cry Anna.
Yeah.
And that was the biggest biggest for us. Probably the absolute biggest was Apple Peaches Pumpkin Pie.
Okay. Yeah. And Polish, it was Polish because there was more notes and it was more energetic than the other styles of polka music, would you say?
I don't know. We tried to play what style was coming out of Chicago. And,
okay.
And did it, but I never heard of it. Maybe that's part of the legacy,
uh-huh,
rather than part of the original decision.
Okay, all right. Well, with that, Gene, we're gonna let you go. We're gonna thank you very specially for being our 300 guests here on our Musicians Come and Play program. And I always tell everyone, the good Lord willing, you and I have another day. We'll do this thing again sometime. How's that?
Excellent, Cy.
Very, very good. If you want to hang on the line, Gene, I'll talk to you off the air. But right now, we're going to wish you a very good afternoon.
Oh, and you too. And to all the listeners.
All right. So there he goes, Mr. Gene Thomas, the Dolly Brothers Orchestra from back in the days, our 300th guest here on our Musicians Come and Play program. Don't go away. We've got music coming up by Gene Thomas and the Jolly Brothers.